This podcast is proud to be a part of the Blueberry Network. Find freshly picked podcasts just for you at blueberry.com. That's blueberry.com.
We were talking about maybe we should change the theme song, but I think I got outvoted.
Okay. Yes.
What do you think, Clay? Should we change the theme? Should we change
it? It's very distinctive.
That's a good answer. We want to be distinctive. David, don't fiddle around with it.
All right, okay. I'll leave it alone.
He's such a problem. Hurry up, David.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marsha Fulmer. And we are theater geeks. Oh, thank you. The theme is being brought to you.
There we go.
By today's guest.
There you go.
Yes, right.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour, and this is Theater Geeks, a podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And we've gotten a sideways introduction to our guest for today, Mr. Clay Mabbitt, who is in Indianapolis and produces the Sold Out Run podcast at soldoutrun.com. Correct, Clay?
That is absolutely correct.
And thank you.
Welcome
to Theater Geeks. Wait a minute.
I have to be nice.
Come on, Marshall. Let's go.
What's your question?
My question is, sold out, is that really true or is that what you're hoping it to be?
Well, the story behind the name, actually, I'll jump right in and share that now.
Okay.
The first show that I ever marketed, I had kind of taken a hiatus from theater in high school and college. I did a lot with the Lafayette Civic Theater, and kind of got away from it for a while. And then about a dozen years later, somebody that I knew wrote an original show. And I kind of said,
you
know
what? Opinion?
Do what?
Did they ask your opinion?
Well, I kind of said, hey, I've been working professionally in marketing for a while. Maybe there's a way I can help promote this show. And gotcha. And I got involved with that. And that actually was a sold out run. And that sort of inspired me. I'm like, you know what? I really like this. I feel like I've learned a lot in my day job marketing that so many theaters could benefit from. And that I just kind of, I was itching to get that out there. And so I started a blog and later added the podcast. And but no, not everything that I ever do is a sold out run.
No.
Okay. Because no. If you have the secret to that, please, we'll totally go so that only we can hear you. But we'd love to know what that is.
Well, right. you recently were interviewed on another podcast regarding ways to get that opening night sold out. And it's interesting because we've always said, you know, that it would be really nice to, like, maybe if we could just start the show on the second weekend, because that's when all the word of mouth has gotten out and the audience tends to get a little bit larger. Is the problem with opening nights that people don't want to take the risk until they hear something about the show?
Cowards.
That's very much true, because there are people like us that are students of theater, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm putting
Absolutely.
Words in you guys' mouth.
No.
But when you see a show, even if it's not flawless, you know, there's things that you can appreciate about it. You learn from that experience. You can enjoy the art form. But there are people that only go to a couple shows a year. And to them, the idea of sitting through 2 hours of not excellent theater is kind of terrifying. And so they do want to wait until they know whether or not it's good. And that is why so many people do not jump. They'll wait to jump on the bandwagon until after opening night.
And that's one of the problems that we have, too, with doing works that haven't been done around here or something that's maybe a little bit more modern. I mean, everybody's seen Oklahoma, right? You know, so you know that there's going to be a certain number of the audience going to say, oh, I just love to see Oklahoma again. Well, you know, Oklahoma's a good show, but you want to do something newer. You get that, well, I've never heard of that before kind of mentality.
Really?
And you think, well, don't you want to see something you've never seen before? Wouldn't that be nice? But it's a hard sell for some reason.
It is. People want to see something new, but already know that it's going to be great.
Okay.
Which is, you know, that's, you can't guarantee
and
that.
And we always say, how do we get our audiences to understand that our quality is always consistent. So they're going to be disappointed if they
everything
come
we do
weekend.
Is great.
Well, it's consistent, though.
It's consistent.
David. It's
right.
It's consistent.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what you have to kind of build up to so that your audiences know that whatever is on your stage is worth plunking down.
But even at whatever. That, even at that, don't people still have this sort of like gnawing fear that it's going to be 3 hours that they can't get back?
Well, they do.
It is.
Yeah. And sometimes it will, like that's the worst part, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it will be.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just the it's live theater.
And, that's right.
You know, and especially in community theater, it's not the same people on stage every time. There's, mm-hmm. you know, there's going to be different levels of talent.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just think there are other community theaters in this area that seem to be able to fill their audiences opening night. And they
so what are some
it's
of
a secret
so,
we don't have.
Some of what are some of the tips for that you have for selling that opening night or getting a good excited crowd there to build that word of mouth?
Well, the I think the theaters that do it effortlessly are ones that have built up an audience that's larger than the capacity of their theater, for one mm-hmm. thing.
Okay.
But those people are, it's those are your patrons. You know, they're going to support you no matter what you put on stage, as long as you keep that standard that you guys were talking about of, mm-hmm. you know, we're consistently pretty good right. Or pretty good, whatever your level is for your theater. Then they're always going to show up. Now, if you haven't reached that yet, there are things that you can do to try to foster that. And the overarching theme is, how do you turn opening night into an event? Mm-hmm. That there's a reason to come to opening night above and beyond any of the other nights. There's going to be something special.
Right.
Or multiple special things. So the most vanilla version of that we've all kind of heard of before is doing a talk back after mm-hmm. the show. Now, depending on your show, that may not be special enough, or your program may not lend itself well to that, or your cast may not lend itself well to that, I suppose. But doing something like a chance to meet the cast after. And mm-hmm. if it's a kid's show, maybe it's taking pictures with them or catering the event ahead of time. You know, and I've done a blog post about this that I'm sure we could link to. And I don't know how much detail you want to go into.
Well, sure. I just think, you know, the talk back thing is, you know, our actors always meet the public afterwards, but it's not a formalized thing with a Q&A and where it's really like a separate program element or something like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Like really sitting down and turning it into a conversation about the piece. And mm-hmm. there's different angles you can take. If you've got an audience that's of students, you know, you would take that academic angle.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Of how you put it together. But if it's more of the general public, maybe you would talk about the themes that were brought up in the show. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, if you're doing Lion King, there's not a lot of themes to get into.
Right.
But, you know, you're going to have more kids and you can talk to them like, what's it like to have all these puppets and wear mm-hmm. this makeup? And
right. Well, we just got done doing a production of the 39 Steps. And it seems that it would have been a chance because it was a small cast to, you know, to sit and kind of ask questions, because everyone who came through the what we call kind of the receiving line was asking, how did you do all those costume changes? How did you do, you know, this, that? You know, they wanted to know how that all happened. And so that's the kind of show where, you know, I think the general public seems that they would be interested in that kind of thing potentially.
So that's definitely a good candidate. And in order to make that work, if you just say, hey, we're having a talk back, mm-hmm. a lot of people won't know enough what that is to stick around. And then if they do, they're going to kind of sit on their hands waiting to see what happens.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you can seed that conversation mm-hmm. by starting with some questions.
Right.
You know, and it's helpful to have a moderator there.
Yeah.
To just sort of direct the traffic.
Sure. Sure. So you don't get repetitive and things like that. So,
yeah,
cool.
Clay, what do you think about papering opening nights?
It's a double-edged sword. And I think a free ticket, if someone shows up, is better than an empty seat. There's a guy, Matt Lehrman, who does he goes around the country and speaks on audience development. And he has this phrase that I love of saying, empty seats are the enemy. Because when we're sitting in a theater, we're students of theater, but when the general public is sitting in a theater and they look around and they see a lot of empty seats, yes, they feel like, what am I missing?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, does everybody else know something I don't? Right. Should I even be here?
But on the other hand, a free seat isn't necessarily discounting seats isn't necessarily what you want to do either, is it? To fill that audience, fill that? I mean, it's better than not filling, but is it almost better to give away seats than to go to the discount route sometimes?
Sometimes it depends on how you're giving them away. I mean, really, anytime you're bringing someone in, it's not just a warm body to fill that seat. What you're hoping is that they will then go talk to their circles of influence, their friends and family, and say that they liked the show.
Right.
So you need to be really explicit with that. You know, don't just hand someone a ticket and say, "Hey, I hope you enjoy the show." You know, really say like, "So here's what we're doing. We're going to give some people a special preview of opening night, so that you can come in and see. And what we want you to do is let us know what you really thought of it. And maybe you've got a page on your website where, you know, a lot of websites will have the comments thing built in. So you don't need technical expertise, but just say, you know, come leave a comment here that's a review of the show, and, you know, tell your friends and send them a follow-up email, you know, 2 days after the show and say, you know, we hope you like the show. Who else do you think would like it?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm rambling now, but
right. Yeah. What about, and you, IRT recently told us that they were actually incorporating, and I don't know if we could do it because our theater is relatively small, but incorporated tweet seats so that people could actually use a specific hashtag and tweet out their comments about the show, et cetera, during the show. And then, you know, these things can get picked up and used elsewhere. Is that a viable kind of thing with social media during the show?
So I have two hats that I can wear on this. I have my actor hat, mm-hmm, where I can say like, "I don't want you looking at your phone. I want you to be engrossed in the show." And then I've got the marketing hat that's like, yes, that has a positive impact that social media mentions are getting out there. I think the key is whether or not your venue is set up to make that happen. Do you have seats that are in the back where whatever, even the little bit of ambient light that comes up, that's not going to be visible to anybody? You kind of need seats that are behind everyone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
So if you've got a narrow theater, that's great. If you've got a wide theater, it's tough.
Yeah. What do you think in general, or do you feel that the social media aspect is critical? We basically hear yes, but I wonder what your take is on it.
I don't know that it's critical, but it's such low hanging fruit that it's hard to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it one of the best things about it is that it makes it easy for other people to help you. Mm-hmm. The fact that things can be shared and liked and commented on, you know, that you can tag someone on Facebook and then their friends see it. You're not asking a lot of them. Like if you hand someone a stack of posters and say, "Okay, I need you to hit Main Street," that's asking a lot of them.
Right.
But social media makes it easy for people to help you without breaking a sweat, I guess, really.
Right. It's very easy. If they enjoyed the show and are at least willing to say that in a couple of sentences, then mm-hmm, it can go to maybe 400 or 500 people or whatever that you wouldn't have reached otherwise.
Exactly.
Okay.
And
I don't know what you want. I just came from IRT and I do not recall them saying before the show, "Please, you know, we're having people tweet, don't pay any attention."
No, the artistic director from there, when we interviewed her, she talked about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Janet.
Yeah. They ask everybody to please tweet at intermission if you like the show.
But she specifically said they were putting in tweet seats in the balcony and they're in the last row of the balcony.
Last row of the balcony. You can tweet. Yeah. We were alternatively appalled and then kind of curious about it, I guess.
My mouth dropped open. It's like, you would really want that to happen?
Forget it.
The back row.
What are some other ways to make that opening night exciting and ticket worthy?
Yes. Okay. So you mentioned papering the house. In addition to papering the house, any of the ways that you give away tickets, you know, you probably give comp tickets to your cast and crew, if you've got any corporate sponsors, mm-hmm, funneling all of that as much as possible to opening night. that's a low hanging fruit. You know, and you might say to your actors, hey, you've got two tickets for opening night and then two tickets for anywhere else later in the run. Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly, if someone from your cast comes up and says, hey, I've got family coming in from, you know, the other coast and they are only coming on this night, can I move my tickets? You would probably let them, but you're just setting it up so that as much as possible.
Yeah. Or aim at that direction. Yeah.
Yeah. I had, there was a show here in Indy recently. It was a production of Extremities, which is about, sexual assault and violence. And so for opening night, there was sort of this charity event and a silent auction that when the house opened, there were all these things that had been donated, works of art and mm-hmm. gift certificates and things like that around town. And all of that was a fundraiser and the money was given to several different nonprofit organizations in Indianapolis that work to combat sexual assault. So there was a thematically appropriate charity, and that helps tie in
right
a lot for opening night that way.
Yeah, yeah. You can sometimes get sort of a synergy there with another organization if the cause is correct and it fits, obviously.
Right.
I like that idea actually.
Yeah,
a lot.
Well, and it's important because there are some shows. I mean, honestly, when you sit down and think, if you're doing a show like Extremities, how mm-hmm. do you market something like that? It's not a feel good show.
Right. No.
So you kind of have to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
But even partnering with another organization for the entire show is not a bad idea either. Which,
certainly not.
You know, when you're working with another not for profit, especially that might drive their participants at that organization to attend your show, because it's a benefit for both, you know, so it's benefiting both organizations. It's no matter when they attend this show.
Right. Yeah. That kind of brings up that's also kind of fodder for one of the other tips that I heard you mention earlier was the pre-show. Actually, you talked about a pre-show lecture, actually, but you could do any kind of a pre-show program, you know, depending on the show to kind of give people more insight into either the show itself or the issue that the show revolves around.
Absolutely. And that you can frame that any way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're doing the Diary of Anne Frank, you could have things set out in the lobby. Maybe it's not people performing, but you know, kind of like what you might find at a museum, just sort of historical information to give people the context of the show.
It's very funny you say that because we did Anne Frank, and we actually contacted the museum in New York and had them bring one of her exhibits in.
Excellent.
And it was in the aisles and people, you know, it was in stations and people could walk the aisles and read the stations before the show. And it was kind of cool because it surrounded the audience then. So you had these images of her life surrounding the audience while the show was going on. So it was just a very interesting event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great. Well, and that's a great point too. The best marketing has artistic integrity. And most people in our society, I feel like sales and marketing, I mean, we acknowledge that it's important, but it's always kind of like a drag. It's just not fulfilling. But the best promotional material, I feel like you start entertaining and engaging someone with your show long before they sit down in the seat. If you're doing it right, every marketing piece you have, every time they see the poster or see a social media update, that is engaging them in part of the artistic experience of the show. Now, the big climax is on stage, but you're planting seeds and starting to grow that experience weeks ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. If you can, and especially like in a historical thing, there seems like there's an awful lot of opportunities to educate the public, you know, far ahead of the show. And make it part of the promotion.
Yeah. As much as you can tie it together, that's always going to be the most effective.
Okay. Yeah. So how else do we make first nights exciting?
Well, when you partner, so we talked about partnering with nonprofits, charity organizations, any kind of partnership that you do, you know, if you're doing Willy Wonka and you partner with the local candy store, set up those promotions to sort of drive to opening night, you know, have it printed on the receipt at the candy $1 off
right.
opening night tickets. And then your ticket stub from the show is good for a $1 off at the candy store. So
right.
everybody wins.
We did, backing up a little bit, we were talking about ticket giveaways and things like that. We've done some ticket giveaways on the radio, and it's kind of a mixed results kind of thing. And what we found is in some cases, people win the tickets and then just don't come anyway. And you kind of think, well, so what do we do that for? You know? And so, well, I mean, I think it gets, it gives the radio station another reason to mention you on the air. So I guess that's good. But other than that, you kind of wonder, well, you know, now there's two empty seats there that we gave away that we really can't sell now. And so, you know, it didn't accomplish what we wanted to in that regard. What's your take on that kind of stuff?
I think contests, if you were only doing them to get those two people in the seats, that they wouldn't be worth the right. time.
Oh, sure.
The real value of a contest is that it gives you something to talk about in all your other marketing. So here's the challenge in theater when you're marketing, you know, it's so easy to fall in the trap of saying rehearsals are going great. You know, this is going to be a wonderful show. Tickets are going fast. But literally you could say, people would say that whether the show's good or bad,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're working hard in rehearsal. This is going to be awesome. But that doesn't tell me anything. That doesn't make me want to see the show.
Right.
So you need to talk about different things, and talking about how you're doing this ticket giveaway. And the more complex, for lack of a better word, you can make the contest. That's the wrong way to say it.
More involving.
More involving. Right. Yeah. So if it's just, there's some contests that are, you know, like us on Facebook and we're going to randomly pick two people. That's not awesome.
No.
But no
skill required.
No skill required.
Right.
Recently, Sullivan, I'm totally blanking on her name. Sutton Foster. Sutton Foster came and had a concert here in Indy that was sponsored by ATI, Actors Theater of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I helped them with was creating a video contest. So they were targeting a lot of high school students, and really it was on your smartphone,
mm-hmm.
you know, record yourself and tell us why you're Sutton Foster's biggest fan. And then those videos we put up on a webpage and people could vote on the videos. And so of course these high school students are telling all of their friends and family, hey, come click on my video to vote. There were only three videos that entered. It really wasn't, we weren't marketing to that small handful of people that created those videos,
mm-hmm.
but there were hundreds of people that saw the video and clicked like, and that was the real value of the contest. It turned into a marketing promotion because of that.
I see. So, and then these were just, you basically posted the videos on YouTube is all you did with those then?
Yes.
YouTube and Facebook.
I fancied it up because I am a web programmer by trade.
Uh-huh.
So I put them all onto a web page, but the videos themselves were just on YouTube.
Right. Yeah. Cool. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting idea.
That's interesting to hear what he's doing to get that word out mm-hmm. and make it stick. I like
it. That's good.
Yep. Okay. Okay. And you again, can continue because like, we all like
it. We all liked it. We all liked it.
Really?
Good.
So have you ever had done a show where, oh boy, you had this great opening night and then suddenly the attendance sort of trails off because the opening night energy didn't stick, or does that not usually happen?
It doesn't usually happen. If it does, as painful as it is to admit it, the most likely scenario is the show is not up to the standard of what people were expecting.
Right. So you get a lot of people to see the first show and the word of mouth is not good afterwards.
Yes, that would be what would cause that.
So if you're asking people to Twitter about this, you have to accept the fact that maybe some of them are going to say, don't bother with this when it's a real stinker.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's not going to help you.
No. It is a very real possibility, but it almost never happens because people people will complain to faceless companies. People will get on Twitter and say, Comcast is, you know, doing these things that I don't like, because we get mad at corporations. But individuals, just in general, as a society, and there are exceptions, you know, if you watch a show that's not good,
right,
you're just kind of glad it's over. You just want to move on to the next thing.
Go home and take a nap, right?
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you will get some things that are, well, a great example is the Open Book Project was a series of blog posts that I did on Sold Out Run, where basically I I let everybody look over my shoulder as I was advising. I came up with a marketing calendar and a campaign for mm-hmm. this is what we're going to do to promote this show. And attendance for the show was not good. It just didn't connect. And, you know, I saw the show. I thought it was good, but it didn't resonate. You know, things didn't work out. And of course, I detailed all of that on my blog. But when people talked about it, it tended to be a lot more, you know, I didn't get it. Go see this for yourself. Maybe you'll see something I didn't. But for me, it didn't work. That's mostly what people said.
Right. Which is fairly kind.
It is. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I'm surprised. I mean, we haven't actually, I think, you know, I look back at, you know, Facebook comments and things like that, and especially for community theater, and here our theater community is relatively small. You know, maybe people don't really want to pound on each other too much.
It's absolutely true in community theater. I think professional theater, there is it's a different
expectation
arena. And certainly that your local critics, I think, are less forgiving of professional theater. You know, if you're getting paid, gosh darn it, you know, there better be something there.
That's right.
Exactly.
And have you worked with community theaters as well?
Yes, I have. In unofficial capacities, and also mm-hmm. I perform in both some small professional and community theater here in Indy. Uh-huh. So I've just developed relationships with a lot of people here.
And how is community different than the professional from the standpoint of marketing? Is it any different, really?
The only difference is there's a crutch that is used a lot by community theaters of maybe, and I'm not sure every theater does this, but we can probably all imagine theaters that do. They'll pick at least one show that's a cast of 50 plus, and they're counting on the friends and family of that large cast to kind of fill the coffers for the season.
I'm putting you on because absolutely.
Yeah,
that's what we do,
sure.
Especially in the summertime. What show can we do that has a lot of kids in there? Because with them come parents and grandparents and friends and neighbors, and it's amazing. But you can't do that every time because kids are in school.
You can't. And also, I don't want to make it sound like that's purely negative. I mean, that's how you get the community involved and give kids an opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of advantages to that, too. But you don't see that happen in professional theater.
No.
That's like almost the only difference. Everything else between community theater and professional theaters, you know, established theaters like the IRT is a completely different model for how they market.
Right.
They're doing a lot of group sales and working with, and they certainly want individual sales too, but they're operating in a different sphere.
Well, they're operating, I mean, what you're saying with group sales, and that's like tourism is what they're working with. They're more oriented towards the tourism end of Indy than perhaps other theaters may be.
Okay. They also do spectacular productions.
Oh, did you guys see Mountaintop?
No, but my friend did, because I don't get down there that often, and she raved about it. And I just saw The Game's Afoot.
Okay. I've not seen that yet, but...
Just hold your breath when they open the curtain, because you'll go crazy. The audience did the night we saw it. Wow. Amazing. And it's so funny and so good, and I loved it. But they didn't have a full house, and Janet said they're always striving. They're always looking for new ways, not just for opening night, because they always have a reception, so people know about their opening night.
And right.
We have a small mini reception every opening night also, and when the artistic director makes his curtain speech, he always invites everybody that's there to come into the green room. Right. Meet the cast and have some refreshments.
Sure.
So, you know, we do that.
But I don't know that the receptions always draw, you know, ticket sales.
Right.
I mean, because we get sort of the same people on opening nights in general.
Usually the same crowd.
Yeah.
But it's our goal. You know, let's see how we can get those people and more people there.
Yeah.
So it's good to talk to Clay, because I like there's a lot of information there, Clay. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. Happy to.
Anything else? So what's next for you? You're continuing now. Sold Out Run is a weekly.
It is weekly, yes.
Weekly podcast. And so you're continuing that, obviously. Anything else going on for you right now?
That's where most of the focus is right now. The Indie Fringe Festival is coming up here in a couple months. So that's everybody's kind of gearing up. I think I'm probably going to be on stage for one show and promoting at least one other show. Yeah. So that will be commanding a lot of my time.
What theater do you work with down there? On stage?
I've been going out of my way to bounce around. So I've been with Carmel Community Players, the Belfry Theater, the Civic, formerly Indianapolis Civic, now Booth Tarkington Civic.
Carmel, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Q Artistry, Red Boat Productions, No Exit. It is a tapestry of small theater communities.
Well, there's a lot of great stuff going on in that Indianapolis and Carmel area. We were down for the National Act Festival last year at Carmel, and that's a beautiful theater that you're in there. So
absolutely.
So anyway, well, thank you very much for being with us, Clay. Maybe we'd love to have you back at some point and continue the discussion, or you know, whatever it comes up that's new for you, and we'd love to get together again
and come see us on an opening night.
Hey, there you go. We'll maybe bring you up
in Elkhart.
Here.
It's not that far of a journey.
That's right.
No, but I go to Indy a lot.
And if you come, Clay, just tweet about it at intermission.
Okay? Yes, there you go. Please.
I will wait till intermission.
Okay. Right.
No, I just want to make sure for appearing on the podcast, I'll be receiving a pair of Theater Geeks underwear. Is that correct?
Oh, stop that.
Thank you, Clay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Right. I'm glad somebody else finally said it.
Okay. He said the word. He said the word. Okay.
And now I don't have to. Thank you, Clay.
All right. Well, hey, that's that kind of wraps it up from us. I'd like to thank Clay for being with us. Thanks, Clay. And we'll just let everybody know that they can go to our online store where they can find that underwear.
And so much more.
TheaterGeeks.com/store. You can also find us on iTunes, Blueberry Network. I won't spell it this time, Marcia. It drives her nuts when I spell it. And you can.
No E's,
it's Blueberry with no E's. There you go. And we're on TuneIn Radio. We're on Stitcher On Demand Radio. Are you on all of those too, Clay?
I'm on Stitcher. I don't think I'm on all those, actually. I'm on iTunes and Stitcher, and then it sort of trails off.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, all right. Well, the Blueberry Network is just where we host the media, but they also have a big page where you can look up all kinds of podcasts as well. So anyway, that's all from us. Thanks again, Clay, for being with us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schelp.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.